Welcome now to the midday for a Tuesday. I'm Norman Gilliland. It is a true crime story and a ghost opera all rolled into one. And of course, that means a lot of music. And the name of the piece is Everlasting Faint. And the world debut takes place right here in Wisconsin, in Madison, Friday, February 13th at 7:30, and Sunday, February 15th at 2:30 at the Capitol Theater, the Overture Center for the Arts in Madison. Everlasting Faint comes to us courtesy of composer Scott Gundell. And welcome to the midday.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, the questions are proliferating quickly here. A true crime story and a ghost opera. How did you come up with the story?
The librettist, Sandra Flores Strand, we met online about 5 or 6 years ago, and she had a file of stories she had just heard out in the wild that intrigued her. And while she was working on a different opera, she saw something in a clip somewhere online, I believe, that said, "Only court case ever won thanks to testimony from a ghost."
Well, of course.
And she was very excited by this and started sketching out ideas for an opera immediately. So when we started working together, she showed me a number of ideas she had, and I was like, hold the phone. That one is fantastic. I'm going to need to know everything about that story.
And is it obvious what attracted you to this story that is just so weird? Or
I think there's a lot going on in the story. The basic outline is that there's a young woman who's found dead, and they declared it natural causes, or one of the words they used was everlasting faint, which essentially was a dismissive way to say about women. They just fainted forever. It's a very dismissive diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then very soon after, her mother was visited by her ghost, who said, "No, they're lying. My husband murdered me. You have to have them. He broke my neck. You have to have them exhume my body," and all these things. Supposedly, this is how the story goes. Mm-hmm. And more ghosts from his past were unearthed. There were other women from his past.
Oh, Bluebeard kind of thing going on there.
He said in jail after this all happened that he wanted 7 wives in total, but he never got there, thankfully. To me, eventually they do get him convicted, thanks to, the mother gave a convincing enough testimony, and they exhumed the body and found that her neck was indeed broken. And so part of what attracted me to it was it's just got so many good operatic things. It's got a trio of ghosts singing for vengeance. It's got a drinking song in the bar. It's got a big exciting finale. It's got some really tender moments between mother and daughter that I think are really great opera. But also I really like, one of my personal missions as a composer working in vocal music is things that feel like they engage with issues that are still true in the modern world, but also do so in a way that's entertaining and not just like terribly dark the whole time.
Well, we don't want to get into too much spoiling.
Yes. I won't spoil too
much. All of that. I mean, we have a pretty good idea of, somebody dies in this opera and comes back to tell about it. But, as far as the way that kind of story would connect with contemporary events, I'm guessing there are ways.
Yeah, there are ways. And I think, there's one of the overarching messages of the thing is just hearing the voices of people whose voices often haven't been heard, which is nice for opera because there are lots of voices in opera. but also just, having everyone listen to the voices of people who are often silenced. I really appreciate that about it.
Speaking of voices, what have we here?
I believe the first excerpt we've got is Little Sparrow, because this takes place in 1897 in West Virginia, I wanted to bring in some sounds borrowed from folk music. There'll be a guitar and a fiddle in the orchestra. There's a traditional Appalachian folk song that's sometimes known as Little Sparrow or Come All You Fair and Tender Ladies, a lot of people have heard. That's often about a young woman trapped in a bad situation, and she sees a sparrow and wishes she could fly like the sparrow. For our version, Sandra, the librettist, wrote this really beautiful spin on it where instead of feeling powerless, she transforms into a sparrow and flies away and feels no pain anymore. And so we wrote this folk song that starts Act Two that sort of has folk-like sounds in it, but also takes it to a more unusual, transcendent place as this young woman manages to escape and transform into a sparrow. In the opera itself, this is sung by a young boy and eventually joined by other people, but this is a version sung by the Madison Opera Studio artists who did a fantastic job.
And the pianist is?
The pianist is me.
Scott Gundell.
Pretending to be a fiddle.
Here we go.
Come all you fair.
From the opera Everlasting Faint, Little Sparrow, the music by Scott Gundell, who is my guest for the midday today. And the entire opera, Everlasting Faint, will have its world premiere in Madison on Friday, February 13th. That's next Friday the 13th. Have you given thought to that when you're doing a ghost opera about murder and that kind of thing?
I hadn't actually considered that. I've been joking with people because it's the day before and the day after Valentine's Day, so we can sort of flank the day.
Another angle.
There's the day dedicated to love that we can sort of flank with murder.
Yeah, I think there are all kinds of possibilities there. And who was the who were the vocalists?
The singers
there
are soprano Alexandra Birch and mezzo Madison Barrett, tenor Ryan Nash, and baritone Lee Fandang.
You, as composer, how closely are you consulted at this point in the production?
You know, I've been actually in all the rehearsals. I wasn't sure I was going to go to all the rehearsals because I know sometimes people would like to try things out without the composer in the room. But also, I love being in rehearsal and nobody's seemed to mind. And it's nice to be in consultation, you know, especially the conductor, Stephanie Rhodes Russell, is really fantastic. And she she has been very closely consulting with me and asking, oh, can we maybe tweak this moment? Or Scott, what do you think if I do this here? It's been really great to have that sort of collaborative relationship in rehearsal.
But you haven't seen, of course, the whole full-blown production yet?
No, the production, you know, I'm seeing it as it takes shape. So today is the first orchestra rehearsal. I can't wait to add that element. And then this coming weekend, we'll add sets and the stage. And then over the week after that, there'll be lighting and costumes and makeup and all the things. And I won't see it all until it happens.
And what if you think, oh, I didn't intend that to be a comic scene there, or well, this, that, or the other? I mean, interpretation,
you know, it's tough. I think flexibility. A thing I love about opera is how collaborative it is. And of course, there's a part of me, as someone who's, this piece has lived inside my head for 5 years now, there's a part of me that finds it really difficult to let go of control. You know, I want to know, control all the things and have them happen. But also, I know that part of what makes opera so exciting is different people take it in different directions, and different performers and directors and conductors have different ideas about how things can go. And I really love seeing the creativity other people bring to it. So there's a part of me that rebels against it sometimes, way on the inside of my brain. But I've been getting better and better as the rehearsal process goes on, of shutting that part of my brain down and just letting people experiment. And then every time I do, when I see, you know, I saw a run through of Act 2 last night, and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And I never even expected that. You know, uh-huh. It was really great.
So
I love that.
Discoveries for you, the composer.
Yeah.
What else do we have here? It's a great name for the perpetrator, Trout.
Yeah, it's a really good name. It was his nickname, and I just love it. Trout, we have a little bit of an aria. This is actually the first thing I wrote for this opera. I am somewhat obsessed with Verdi and the way Verdi gives just the most beautiful tunes to the worst moments of the opera almost all the time. And I like Trout as a tenor, and I like making the tenor the villain. Tenors don't get to be the villain very often. And I think they could be good at it. So this is his aria where he's sort of performing how sad he is at the death of his wife, and also blocking his wife's body so the doctor can't actually examine her. So it's sort of this heart-wrenching, sad tune that has some dark undertones underneath it.
Because he's faking it?
Because he's faking the whole thing. Yeah, he's performing his sadness where he's not actually that sad.
Doctor, is that you?
Mr. Shaw, please accept my condolences.
We've waited for a
women
Some dissembling there on the part of the perpetrator. And I mean, it is no spoiler alert to say that Trout is the perpetrator here. This is not a whodunit.
No, it's not a whodunit. And he's sort of a, you know, I was saying, when you read historical accounts of Trout the man, he is very handsome and very charming and not a particularly good liar. He's just one of these very handsome, charming people who everyone believes because he has a good job. He's handsome. He's charming. He's a blacksmith. And everybody just likes him. And so he can kind of get away with anything.
For a while.
For a while. Luckily, he doesn't get away with it in this opera.
Well, let's round it out with something more positive.
Yeah, this is the prayer duet from the end of Act One. And this is sort of a moment of calm in the middle of the storm a little bit. But this is, there's two mothers. There's Mary, the mother of Elva, who's been murdered. And Martha, who's her next door neighbor, who's sort of her supportive friend. And also the mother of the child who discovers the body. And they're both saying their goodnight prayers in their respective homes. And Mary is sort of thanking God for bringing her daughter back so she can get justice. And Martha is putting her son to bed and having sort of a moment of... I really appreciate Martha is sort of the supportive best friend character. And it's nice for her to have a moment to say, you know, I've been supportive this whole act. And death is really scary and it's taking a toll on me. And I like that the supportive guest, best friend also gets to be very human. So this is a moment where the two of them are both saying their goodnight prayers in their separate homes. And sometimes they sing at the same time and sometimes not. And it's a moment for them to both reflect before things go haywire again.
The prayer duet from Everlasting Faint.
Father,
The prayer duet from Everlasting Faint, music by Scott Kandel, and the libretto by Sandra Flores Strand, and the Madison Opera will be producing the world debut, the world premiere of Everlasting Faint on February 13th. That's
a week and a half from now.
A Friday. How could we forget? Friday the 13th. And that at 7:30, and then Sunday, February 15th at 2:30 at the Capitol Theater Overture Center for the Arts. And you can find out how to get tickets and all the other information at madisonopera.org. For now, know that it is a true crime ghost opera by Scott Gendell, and an opportunity to catch a debut performance. And it's been a pleasure touching bases with you again, Scott.
So great to talk to you, Norman. This is fantastic.